Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Dreadful by Caitlin Rosakis, narrated by Kevil Shah. 1. He woke up with no eyebrows and no idea how he'd gotten into such a position. It wasn't just that he couldn't remember why he was lying on his back, or why there were tiny fires smouldering throughout the room. He couldn't remember the room. It was not the kind of room to be forgettable. The floor was made of black marble, with concentric silver circles embedded in it. The remains of an elaborate pattern of magical runes and indeterminate squiggles, chalked around the outermost circle, had been scuffed into partial illegibility. A dagger, whose death's head pommel gave him the willies, lay coated in caking blood. The wall had manacles embedded in the stone, which made him passingly grateful to have only been on his back on the floor. He didn't know whether the large articulated bird skeleton was intended as an oft-used resource or just decoration. The human skull with a half-melted candle jutting out of it attempted to be both. As far as he was concerned, it succeeded at neither. Who had chosen this decorating scheme? He was tempted to give the owner a piece of his mind. If only he could remember who the owner was, or who he was. The realization did not so much hit him as politely tap him on the shoulder, having waited patiently for him to stop being distracted by the mess. He lost his breath at the thought. How could you forget who you were? If you had forgotten, how could you fail to notice that simple fact? But then, how often did you think about it? He couldn't remember when he'd last informed himself of his own name. But then, he couldn't remember much of anything. He would have to ask the next person he saw. Someone knocked on the door. He immediately abandoned any resolutions of asking anyone anything. He was the only person left in the ruined workshop of someone who kept human skulls as decor. And things were on fire. He did not want the sinister owner of this room to come back and blame it all on him. If he stayed very still, maybe they would go away? Very slowly and with great deliberation, the bird skeleton collapsed. He had enough time to see it start to fall and feel his stomach plummet with it. He had nowhere near enough time to catch it, although he tried. The main mass, its mount weakened by whatever had removed his eyebrows and his memory, slammed into the floor before his outstretched hands. The resulting crash scraped his nerves and echoed through the workshop. Some of the bones bounced free, and these toppled down the bookshelf with musical little plinks. He scrambled after them, as if somehow he could just make the sounds stop happening. Whoever was outside would overlook the first big crash. Bones skittered away from his shaking fingers, a cascading arpeggio. His elbow knocked into the bird skull, which rolled audibly across the floor, grinning all the while. He slammed a foot down on the skull, shutting its gaping beak, and unbalancing a teetering pile of books. He shoved the books back before they could fall, which knocked the stone pedestal behind it over. He sat down heavily, defeated. The bowl, only a little chipped, took its sweet time rolling in a spiral, the sound of stone on stone wobbling finally to a halt. There was a long silence. Someone knocked again.
"My lord!"
The voice was scratchy, accented as if the words didn't quite fit right in the owner's mouth.
"Need firefighting team?"
Oh, he probably should try to put out all those little fires before something bigger caught. But letting in the team would reveal their lord was not here. And then they would want to know who he was, and then a great number of very uncomfortable questions he did not have answers to would result. What would this lord of theirs sound like? Evil, clearly. He tried to make his voice sound deeper. Keep it short.
Everything's fine.
He looked around frantically. Not much in the way of firefighting equipment in the room. A black table hosted glassware, or at least it used to. He hoped it wasn't a problem that half of the potion flasks had shattered, and that a blue liquid was oozing out of a cracked alembic. The way the work table sizzled suggested it might be. But none of the remaining bottles seemed likely to contain water. Fortunately, most of the fires were on the tiny side.
Need help, my lord?
Very persistent. Very commendable. Possibly suicidal. The owner of the voice clearly put duty ahead of self-preservation. He grabbed a thick sheaf of papers and set to beating the little flames to death.
No?
He knocked over a broken bottle, which crashed onto the floor in a spectacular spray of glass shards. A whiff of purple smoke escaped, as the contents rapidly dried into a powdery residue.
My lord!
The handle of the door jiggled. His voice rose to a crack.
Stay out!
There was no way they would fail to notice he wasn't their master. But it was too late to come up with a better plan.
You'll disrupt the spell.
The jiggling immediately stopped.
Sorry, my lord.
The voice had its own note of panic now.
Leave me alone.
There. Another fire out. The hem of his robe had been eaten away to a lacy texture by that splash.
Yes, my lord.
He would have savoured the sound of retreating footsteps, but he was too busy putting out the owl wing that had caught alight. Not until he'd extinguished the last of the fires did it occur to him that the sheaf of papers might have been valuable in and of itself, and perhaps reducing the bottom several pages to charred ruins had been unwise. He collapsed in the massive wooden chair in the corner to catch his breath. It was a monster of a thing, a dark wood nightmare that had to weigh a ton. Sultry carved women peered through hair that barely hid their nakedness. One licked an apple in her hand with a long forked tongue. He stared at it, fascinated and vaguely disgusted, and all too distracted from the real issues he needed to be considering. So, this was shock. It seemed terribly inconvenient that the brain's reaction to being placed in mortal jeopardy was to become much stupider. Focus. Who was he? He was dressed in black velvet, which fell all the way to the floor except for the new holes. Expensive. Soft shoes. Nothing meant for tromping around outside. A belt made of small silver panels linked together, which felt rather like it had been made several years' worth of beer and cake earlier. The sleeves were a lost cause, shredded and singed, the remnants trailing impractically. It all gave him a rather sinking feeling in the pit of his stomach. An enormous mirror, as wide as his outstretched arms and half his height, loomed from an ornate stand bolted to the floor, a couple of inches away from the wall. A sheer piece of black fabric hung over the top, completely covering the glass so he could see dim outlines. He forced himself to his feet. Taking a deep breath, he pulled the cloth free. No shock of recognition. The middle-aged face that looked back at him was not remotely familiar. Pale white skin, dark hair, a rather sinister goatee. Although the look was ruined by the bit of jowl that started to appear around his chin, and the soot, and the lack of eyebrows, the falling sensation in his falling stomach finally hit the bottom. This menacing room, with its mixture of the weird and the ridiculous. It was his. The voice outside the door obeyed his commands because they were familiar. There was only one kind of person who would have such a room, who would dress in such a way. He was a dark wizard. He half expected some kind of acknowledgement of the realization, a roll of thunder, the croak of a crow. But there was nothing. He stared at his reflection, feeling increasingly ridiculous. He turned up his palms, willed them to crackle with electricity, or fill with fire, or, well, something. Nothing. The mirror itself, though, filled him with a sense of unease that did not dissipate until he had draped the fabric back over it. The fabric had two sides, he noticed. One side was translucent, allowing shapes to be discerned. The reverse, on the other hand, was somehow completely opaque. He wasn't sure how he knew, but something told him to make sure the opaque side faced the mirror. So, a wizard. It gave him something more to work with, but the lack of name itched at him. The desk was awash in singed papers and cut crystals, stoppered bottles and small wooden chests, all sprinkled with shards of broken glass. He'd have to sift through it. Surely there'd be some kind of clue. He grabbed a handful of papers. He had a moment of fear that he would have forgotten how to read. How did he know he knew how to read? But the words looked perfectly familiar. They were spell notes, diagrams, and explanations. As he read them, meaning flooded back. He paused for a moment, staring at his hand. It wasn't enough to just will the flame. He needed to picture the diagram, and anchor to another object, and give that odd little twist in his mind. A dried rose, part of an incongruous bouquet, shoved in a dusty bottle in the corner, crumbled to ash as a little ball of fire appeared in the middle of his cupped palm. He stared at it until it burned its way through the fuel he'd given it, and then winked out. He crumpled his face into his hands and nearly wept. He still remembered something. He wasn't totally powerless. He had magic. Or some of it, at least. The simple things. The complex workings, though, eluded him. He could feel the shadowy architecture in his mind, as if he'd stepped into a darkened cathedral with only a single candle for light. The soaring buttresses were more felt than seen. They were still there, just waiting for enough light to be revealed. What else was here? He started opening the little boxes at random. Three teeth, small enough to be a human child's, with too much root left to have fallen out on their own. A pile of black pellets, which he only realized were fumets, after he'd poked them a bit with a finger and then pulled back in disgust. A button, a tiny golden key, the stub of a candle, the skull of a mouse, and an ornately carved black rock that nearly hummed with malice. Two of the boxes were carefully sealed shut with wax. He couldn't remember what was in them, but he knew better than to disturb them. It was too much to have written notes to himself, it seemed. He resolved to write such notes to his future self. Then he realized how very damaging it could be if found by an enemy. Did he have enemies? Surely most dark wizards must have enemies. That was probably why he was in this situation in the first place. He leaned back and looked at the room around him. Papers everywhere. Books, sheaves tied with dusty black and red ribbons, loose piles. It would take him a year or more to read it all. He wasn't sure he had a year. Eventually, he was going to need to leave this room, and then someone was going to notice his predicament. What would they do when they learned the truth? Well, at the very least, he could try to burn them to death. He found the thought both comforting and not comforting at all. He spotted a jar half buried under shrapnel, and bird bones at the back of the desk, and felt his heart leap with excitement. Why? Somehow he'd been looking for this. It was part of the routine. The jar was unlabeled, of course. He took a breath and unscrewed the lid. Inside crawled a nest of furry black caterpillars. They twisted and crawled over each other in a revolting manner. He felt vaguely nauseated. There was something very wrong with them. As he looked closer, he realized they had no feet, nor even really bodies. They were more just a stripe of hair. Then he burst into laughter, tinged only slightly with hysteria. They were eyebrows. Great Tethrax. He must do this all the time, if he kept an entire jar of replacement eyebrows. The uncontrollable explosion thing, if not the memory thing. And who was Great Tethrax? He had a sudden flash of owl wings and hot breath and unquenchable hunger, and resolved to be more careful who he called on in the future. He picked one up by the edge and dangled it above his face, hesitating. It twisted and yearned towards his forehead. He swallowed and laid it on the skin. It crawled across his face, the back of his neck crawling in response, then sunk tiny claws in. He cursed involuntarily, and the entire bouquet burst into flames. This time, at least, he remembered the spell for putting out small fires. Then he grabbed another eyebrow, gritting his teeth. It was no less painful, but at least less surprising. He flipped up the mirror cloth to check his work. He looked a good deal less goofy and more saturnine, with the eyebrows firmly in place. There was nothing to be done about the fat around his chin, though, without a rather more involved spell. He wondered why he hadn't cast it. He wondered how much denial his past self had been in. His stomach rumbled. He wondered what his past self did to get a decent meal. He was thirsty too, which was a more pressing matter. And eventually, he was going to want some clothes that weren't shredded, and maybe a bath, and a few other things that were gradually making themselves more apparent. He couldn't stay in this windowless room forever. There was just one door. He pressed his ear against it. Someone was humming softly and badly out of tune. The owner of the scratchy voice, perhaps? He couldn't let anyone know that there was a problem. His memory might return at any moment. He was certain that any plans he might have had would be thoroughly ruined by an admission of weakness. He owed himself that. Not to destroy whatever it was he had been working on. Not to mention the potential consequences if it became known. Rivals, apprentices, he might even have a nemesis or two. Dark wizards weren't known for their friendly relations. He was certain. Or their benevolence around the countryside. He didn't want to die by fireball or by pitchfork. He tried to imagine how a dark wizard might act. Aloof, certainly. Angry, perhaps. He drew himself up. Distracted. Yes, that might work. He was preoccupied by his research, and very important, and had little attention to spare for things beneath him, such as names or where food came from. That was for underlings. If he had a firefighting team, he must surely have some kind of cook, because he wasn't sure how to make more than a sandwich, and he really wasn't sure where he would obtain the pieces of said sandwich. Would he be the type to absent-mindedly carry papers and keep working as he went, or to lock everything up? It seemed safer to lock it up. There was a large iron key hanging next to the door that glowed faintly as he picked it up. It went with the lock, he could feel. He took one last deep breath and opened the door. There was no one there. Then he looked down. Around waist height stood a... He wasn't sure what it was. It wore armour. The armour seemed to have been intended for someone else, as it didn't fit particularly well. The helmet seemed improbably large, given the guard's lack of stature. A proud red feather had once added height, but it had snapped in half at some point. Through gaps where helmet failed to meet breastplate, the neck appeared green, with a couple of warts that sported impressively long hairs. Farther down, he could see an equally improbably shaped codpiece. He wasn't sure if that hinted at vanity, a lack of appropriately sized armour, or biological facts about an, as of yet, unidentified species that he did not actually wish to know.
My lord!
The mismatched armour collection pulled himself up to something approximating attention.
Need help with fires now?
The guard gestured hopefully at the row of buckets, some of water and some of sand, lined up next to him in the hallway.
Ah, no, he said.
He'd meant to ask about food, or maybe a privy, but suddenly lost his nerve. Maybe it would be easier to find it himself.
Carry on,
He had no idea how to address the spiky little creature, whose halberd seemed entirely too tall for someone of such a height to wield effectively. The creature seemed to sense his confusion, which was not a promising start to the charade.
I be new captain of guard.
What had happened to the old captain of guard? Something better discovered on a full stomach. Maybe. Or maybe better just left alone.
That's excellent. You just keep on guarding.
The captain saluted, misjudging the placement of the inherited helmet, and giving himself a solid whack on the forehead. The creature staggered a little, so he turned away, determined to spare them both the embarrassment. The stone passageway was badly lit with torches that guttered, but did not smoke, casting eerie shadows. He must have enchanted them that way. It seemed like it would have been just as easy to cast ever-burning torches that burned steadily, but he supposed it wouldn't have been as atmospheric. Turning the corner, he nearly collided with a shorter balding man, dressed in dark red. The man recoiled in quickly suppressed terror, before slapping an obsequious expression on his olive face. He didn't trust that expression any further than he could throw the oily bastard, which he doubted was very far. Arm-strengthening exercises clearly had not been part of his personal daily routine.
My lord?
The man in red fawned. Steward, perhaps?
Major Domo?
Someone with an urge to please, certainly. It was a pity he didn't use an actual name. There would be no escaping talking to someone, it seemed. Angry, important, he reminded himself. He narrowed his eyes.
Report.
That seemed innocuous enough. It seemed to do the trick.
The princess has finally ceased her demands, as you predicted.
The steward's voice oozed satisfaction.
The goblins, watching her, have reported that she merely cries in the corner of her cell. She still refuses to eat, however. It may be necessary to use another nourishment spell on her.
The little man's face glowed at the prospect, disturbingly excited. He nearly lost his breath at the influx of new information. He had goblins. He had, most likely, just been talking to a goblin. He had a princess. He had no idea why he had a princess, but he didn't much like the idea of the steward anywhere near her, and he hadn't even met the girl yet. Or at least, he didn't remember her yet.
Princess Eliasha's father has offered a small fortune for her return,
the steward continued. Oh, that seemed like a fairly good reason.
Tempting, he said,
in as neutral a voice as he could muster. What would he do with that much money? Some more practical clothes, and a castle with a lot more natural light, perhaps? What was his past self planning to do with it? More ugly furniture, probably. The steward cackled, as his master appeared to be in good humour. He was clearly willing to play along.
It would be, my lord, wouldn't it? I wish I could see the old fool's face when he discovers the true plan.
Oh dear. There was a plan. Of course there was a plan.
Perhaps you shall,
he said magnanimously. The blood drained from the man's face immediately, and that had apparently been a threat. His stomach clenched. He needed to figure out what this plan was, and how far along it was, as soon as possible. But right now, he needed his steward friendly and helpful, not terrorized. He forced a small smile that he did not remotely feel.
There are such things as magic mirrors, you know, he said,
surprised that he did know such a thing.
I still have use for you, my faithful servant.
Yes, yes, thank you, my lord,
the steward babbled in relief. It was kind of funny, to be honest. He didn't like the man at all, and watching him tremble had a certain entertainment value. He wondered if that was why he'd kept him around. He wasn't sure how he felt about that. He cut the steward's declarations of gratitude off with a gesture, and the man fell mercifully silent.
Now, where were we? I've rather lost track of time in my work.
Would you like to visit the princess now that she's in a more docile mood?
The steward suggested after a moment. He must not be consulted often. A thin sheen of sweat had popped up on his forehead.
Perhaps in a bit, he allowed.
He wasn't sure he did want to visit her. There was a certain desperate curiosity, but he had no idea what he'd say to the woman.
I think perhaps a change of clothes may be in order.
He raised his arms with their tattered sleeves.
Ah, yes,
the steward affected surprise. He couldn't possibly have not noticed until that point.
Lead on,
he said, giving the phrase a sardonic twist, because there was no way that he did not know the way around his own castle. Of course. The steward swallowed and turned. The man did not particularly seem to enjoy having his master at his back. Perhaps he should pretend a new tendency for paranoia, or develop it for real? He wasn't sure he'd want the steward at his own back. Surely the little man could only be pushed so far, before fear and humiliation made him snap. Or maybe he merely turned it all on prisoners. His chambers turned out to not be too far. The steward threw open the door, pausing to see if his master wanted to proceed. He merely raised an eyebrow, and the steward scurried in. He wasn't sure what the steward was afraid he was going to do, and it felt dangerous to use threats he didn't understand. But surely not as dangerous as letting a cowed sadist suddenly discover that his tormentor was vulnerable. What if his servant decided that small treasury sounded good enough for him? He was riding a tiger, it seemed, with no way off. And this was just the second person he'd met. As he stepped inside the chamber, he was dismayed, but not surprised, to see the decorating theme continued throughout his living spaces. At least his taste was consistent. He faced a monstrosity of a four-poster bed, a hulking thing of black wood draped with blood-red velvet. More obscene carvings climbed each bedpost. It was tacky. The chamber boasted a window, at least, although the shutters were barred. Instead of torches, he found clean-burning candles, to his intense relief. He almost tried to thank a deity, realized there was no one he felt safe thanking, and stuttered to a halt in his own thoughts. Motion caught his eye, and he turned to find a creature standing wide-eyed.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?